Kia ora, I'm Lee from Wilderness and welcome to Track Chat. And today I'm chatting with lifelong mountaineer and author Ross Cullen about his book, Bill McLeod, Mountaineering Legend. Welcome, Ross.
Hello, Lee. Good to meet you too.
For listeners who don't know, who is Bill McLeod?
Bill McLeod is now an elderly mountaineer. He and I are the same age, 78. He has completed a remarkable number of first ascents in the New Zealand mountains. Despite starting climbing at age 30 when he arrived from Australia, he has climbed amongst the hardest climbs in the country and a lot of them. And so his contribution has been huge to sort of advancing New Zealand climbing during the 80s, 90s, early 2000s.
I was reading that he's put up more than 100 first ascents, and many of them solo and many in winter.
Correct. He began climbing solo because of his job, really. He worked down in Te Anau when he first arrived in New Zealand. His days off were Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody else had Tuesdays and Wednesdays off, so he started climbing by himself and continued for a long time. And his holidays were in the winter. So he went to Mount Cook and did solo winter ascents, which astounded everybody because that was an unusual thing to do. But to him, it was sort of natural because that was the time he had available. He continued with that pattern for quite a while until he got to know a lot more people and his job changed and he had weekends off eventually. But yes, he did more than 100 first ascents in the mountains and then quite a lot of rock climbing first ascents as well.
How did you come to meet Bill?
Well, Bill lived in Te Anau for about 10 years, from 1978 until 88. And as his climbing skills developed and his aspirations grew, he would drive to Dunedin to climb at Long Beach. And I used to live in Dunedin at the time. And so I first met Bill when he started climbing there. And then a friend and I, Greg Amer, drove down to Te Anau and stayed with Bill overnight and went climbing with him at a crag nearby called Freestone Hill. That's when I first really got to know Bill. And then just sort of kept in contact vaguely after that until he left Te Anau and moved to Christchurch about the same time as I did. And hence we got to know each other again and then started climbing together.
During that time, you were putting together a guidebook for the Ohau Landsborough region.
That's what it's called now. I bought out the first two editions of that guidebook, which was called Barron Saddle to Mount Brewster. That's the northern and southern boundaries of it. And I began work on that guidebook in about 1992. I put an advertisement out saying I was looking for information to help me. And Bill obviously read that and so got in touch and said he was keen to see an early draft of it. I gave an early draft, which included lots of provocative statements like, there's an obvious climb here which nobody has done so far. And so he and often with Peter Dixon said, well, we'll just go and climb it. And so they did. They helped in terms of providing me lots of information, and that fed into the first edition of the guidebook. And then they kept on climbing, and Bill climbed with myself and Jeff Gavities and other people and kept on adding to the new routes in that area. So he's done over 50 first ascents in the Ohau Landsborough Barron Bruce area by himself.
Bill was an avid letter writer, and excerpts from his many letters to fellow climbers are peppered throughout the book. And you in turn asked those climbers to write about Bill. In this way, it makes it a deeply personal book, and I'm curious why you decided to structure the book in this way.
Okay, well, I find Bill an extremely interesting personality. He's quite different to most people, and he's obviously completed a staggering amount of very impressive climbing. So I always had this idea that it would be good to write a book about what he'd accomplished and about Bill himself. But I was nervous about doing so for a long time because Bill's quite a reclusive person and I wasn't sure how he'd react to the idea of me writing a book about him. And so I sort of delayed doing so for quite a long time. But I did also keep on accumulating these letters, which I have in my filing cabinet just nearby, and there's over 220 letters. I thought one day I could write to the other people who he climbed with, and we could each write about our experiences climbing with Bill. And he couldn't stop us doing that because we can write about that. And so it wasn't quite the same as saying, Bill, I want to sort of, you know, write a biography about you by, you know, interviewing Bill endlessly, which he would never have accepted, I would say. So I came up with this idea of structuring the book around other people's as well as my own contributions, and they agreed to do that very readily. And then the letters are so rich and so insightful into what he's done and his thinking and concerns and fears and joys. And he writes so brilliantly, in my opinion. It's so evocative.
Do you think he wrote letters more than other people, or was that the means of communicating at the time?
He did write a lot more letters, I think, than other people. He has a sister in Australia. They swap letters once a month. He used to write to his mother once a week. So he is a prolific letter writer.
Tell us a little bit about him as a person. He comes across in the book as being very driven, very single-minded when it came to mountaineering, very frugal and quite enigmatic.
Yeah, some people have certainly described him as enigmatic, which is not probably that accurate, actually. I mean, he is explicable. As you say, he's very driven. He's very single-minded. He wants to do things his way. He almost invariably does do things his way. He just developed an ambition to come and live in New Zealand and climb, and he's pursued that very diligently. He's physically very capable. He's a very tough person. You know, he can withstand the cold and the hardship more than most people can. He's reclusive. He doesn't like publicity. He actually enjoys company when you're climbing with him. And he loves talking, actually, despite the fact he's reclusive. You know, he'll yarn away for hours. When you go climbing with him, Bill's yarning away. And I'm thinking, yes, Bill, no, Bill, you know, trying to keep up and let him continue talking. So he does love company when he knows somebody. But he's a very private person. Love to live by himself, and it's lived by himself all his life, really.
There's a section in the book where you talk about his style of climbing too, that he was very methodical and couldn't be rushed.
Bill, you know, he wasn't slow. He tells you he was slow, but that's not true. He was pretty steady. But yes, he had worked out that if you're in the mountains, then sweat is going to get your damp clothing. It's going to feel bad when you stop and cool. And so he had figured out this alternative approach of going at a steady pace, not getting a sweat on, and then accepting the fact that it's going to take longer, and bivvying. A bivvy was fine. In fact, he treasures bivvies. He's got a special table for his topo maps, and he's got all his climbs marked on the maps, and his bivvy sites are all marked with a cross. So he treasures bivvies.
And what does life look like for Bill these days?
Well, Bill, as I say, is 78 years old. His health is not fantastic. He's quite limited in mobility. He can still cycle, but he really can't walk very far. So he lives quietly by himself. He lives on a cul-de-sac street. Hopes that it stays that way, that it never gets overpopulated or overcrowded. And wintertime is the best time. It may seem like a tough time, and to us or to a lot of people, but he thinks it's the best time because it's probably the quietest time. And he can live there quietly by himself and enjoy the scenery in the magnificent Mackenzie Basin that he's spent so much time enjoying.
And what's his response to the book been?
He loves it, actually. So I was nervous about it. I sought his permission before we started and then kept him a brief on progress. And so he read drafts right from the start. And I've actually quoted a letter he wrote to me and said, I've read your book. Actually found it looks very interesting book, actually, which is great news. And then since the book has been published, he's read it twice. And he wrote to me not that long ago and said, I've read it a second time. He said, I actually enjoyed it more the second time than I did the first time. And I suspect that's because he's sort of anticipation. If you read it once in a while, I know what's coming up on the next page. So this is going to be good. And so he loves it.
That's the ultimate praise, really, from your subject, and yeah. I imagine to some degree a relief.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a wonderful book, and I wish you all the best with it, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. Good to talk to you.